Today's class is going to be a little different because we've been talking about a lot of mental health issues, and that's been our focus. COVID and the pandemic has changed some of that and allowed us to talk a little differently. And we've started to learn how to come to you with like resources, like in our living room with a black background here that allows us to do that, which I never would have thought we'd be doing. But this gives us the opportunity to share some new things with you. And one of the topics that's come up a lot recently, not just because of what's happening in our world, is diversity, sexual harassment, and hostile work environment at the fire department. We're talking about first responders in general here, and it covers a lot of those topics. But what we want to talk to you about today is, what does it look like for real? Not necessarily what a textbook tells you, not necessarily what an outline will tell you, and we'll cover some of that stuff, but really what it means to understand diversity, understand discrimination, understand a hostile work environment, sexual harassment, and how it really plays out in the field with first responders. We're amazing at joking about things and laughing about things and some things that probably aren't appropriate. I mean, I never do, but Brandon, my friend here, always laughs at things that are inappropriate. And it's never me. I never do. We all do. And we've learned kind of how to cope with some of those things and our jaded personalities that sometimes deal with some of the loss we face, some of the trauma. But it's still important to understand right and wrong. And one of the words I hear recently a lot more is climate. This climate we're in. I used to think climate was only temperature, but we live in a little different climate now because of what we've been facing. And so Brandon is a friend of mine who works here at a local department as well. And we've known each other for quite some time. In fact, I think I taught a class that you were taking. Yeah. Which one was that?
I think it was a fire protections class, or it was some type of a fire prevention class.
Well, you were in big trouble because I don't know what I was doing in that class. So
I was studying driver operation stuff while I was there too for a test.
I think that was our conversation when I said, hey, what's going on back there? You and I think your friend Iris, you guys were studying for a test. And I'm like, listen, I know you're here taking the class. We'll get you the information, but I know how hard it is to study for promotional exams. And I think you got promoted on that test, didn't you?
Or I actually did it.
The
next one I did.
Sorry, well, maybe we'll leave that in. We'll leave that in. Because listen, if we mess up sometimes, it's okay. I haven't got promoted on every test I've taken either. But Brandon's become a good friend of mine. And actually,
9 years.
Is it 9 years now?
Coming on 9 years.
Wow. Yeah. And I've gotten to know you a little better because your stepbrother got hired in my department. I got to know him.
Yeah.
Half brother. Great dude. Got to know him really well. So we talked through that process and you kept your finger down on him, making sure he was doing the right thing. And so we've gotten to know each other really well. And then during what's happened recently in our world, in the last really 2 years, I'd say, with some of the unrest, some of the things that have gone on, you're somebody that I come to and say, hey, we got different backgrounds. Help me out here.
Yeah.
And you're awesome because you're always going, okay, let me tell you the real deal here. Let me tell you what I really think. And I got some friends who do that. I have some who go, he may not want to hear the real thing. So I appreciate that from you. So Brandon's going to join us today and talk about this topic, kind of give a different perspective, but also to be able to talk about what this really means. So let's first of all do this. Let's define some things for you. The word racism is a word that gets used a lot. It gets thrown around a lot, sometimes used right, sometimes used wrong. The actual definition is this. It's a belief that a race is the primary determinant of human traits and capacities, and that racial differences produce an inherent superiority of a particular race. That's Webster's definition. Right. I think I have to give Webster credit for it because I didn't come up with it. Another little subset says this, a doctrine or political program based on the assumption of racism and designed to execute its principles. The word prejudice gets thrown a lot in here with it, and you'll see that term as well. That term really means the belief that that race is the primary determinant. So it's not just that it's racism. I don't like you because you're a different color than me. It's actually saying this one characteristic, the race that you come from, is how we're going to determine whether I'm inferior to you or superior to you. And when I read that, I went, wow, okay, that's phenomenal. You have any thoughts on that word as we talk about it a little bit?
Yeah, there's the big difference between, like you said, prejudice and a superior race.
Yes.
Like if you anybody can have prejudices. We all come with different biases and how we feel about things. But when you actually feel like you're more superior and better than another person because of their skin color, that's when racism comes to play.
So you just mentioned prejudice, which is our next definition. Nicely done. We're already getting this thing down here. The word prejudice, injury or damage resulting from some judgment or action of another in regard disregard of one's rights. It says especially detriment to one's legal rights or claims. So you did a good job of explaining that difference, because there are people who just are prejudiced against anybody not like them, not about race, just in general. I don't like you because of whatever this reason is. And I think that we get a lot of those times the words confused. Have you seen in your experience people kind of be one way or the other and not even really know it? Like one person that's prejudiced towards somebody and maybe they think it's racism, or right. They're racist and they think it's prejudiced.
Yeah, I feel like it happens every day in everyday life. Everybody likes to kind of stick to, you know, the race that they are in general. Yeah. When you hang out, you say you go to a bar and, you know, you see some people there and, you know, you kind of see, like, the natural reaction is to get close to people who look like you.
Yeah.
That could be a type of prejudice that you might not even know that you're naturally doing.
Yeah.
You know
what I mean? It's that hidden prejudice. I remember I had an issue at work a while back where somebody thought I had done something that was prejudiced towards somebody else. And we had a conversation and realized that it really had nothing to do with it. And I learned some things through it. But I remember a friend of mine asking me, pulled me aside. He's a friend of mine. He's black. And he looked at me and he goes, "Is it possible that you have an unknown bias?" I think it was the word he said, or an unknown prejudice. And I went,
I call it cognitive bias.
Ooh, I like that. See, that you should be teaching this class, not me, not together. You should be doing it by yourself.
All right, I got it.
he's got the rest of this. He's gonna knock it out of the park. I think that when he asked me that, I said, "Well, of course not." And he kind of explained some of it. He goes, "Well, is there that split second thought that initially biases you towards something?" And actually, Malcolm Gladwell in Blink talks about this. And what a phenomenal book if you get a chance to read it. He talks about that split second. What's your initial reaction to that person because of how they look, because of how different they are from you? And listen, we're not saying it's not natural to hang around people that are like you. Right. I know there are same thing with firefighters. If we go somewhere and see a firefighter, I don't care what color, gender, background, whatever they are, that's a firefighter. Right. We're the same.
Right.
So if I'm looking for a group like me, so it's obviously natural to find yourself, you know, drawn towards people that are like you. We get it. But it's that idea that if that's constantly the only people you're surrounding yourself with, there is no diversity. There is no ability for you to learn from other cultures because you're prejudicing yourself against it to begin with.
Which also leads to people feeling a certain type of way. They feel more, they feel like they're being singled out when people don't, you know, extend the hand and try to hang with the people that might not look like them.
Yeah.
Like you say, you go to a firefighter conference and, you know, you see a bunch of firefighters, you're just going to go and gravitate to them and talk about your departments and talk about, you know, what you have, what you don't have, what you want to have. You know, it's just natural. But race is definitely is the determination of, you know, people wanting to get together.
Yeah, I like that. The third word is kind of one we just mentioned as well, which is bias. And the definition of bias, once again, credited to Webster, not you and I. An inclination of temperament or outlook. A personal and sometimes unreasoned judgment. And it goes back to the prejudice part of it. And then some of the words that go with it are bent, tendency. Actually, we talk about this when we study for tests. They talk about evaluations, evaluation bias, and whether you're biased towards treating someone well because you know them, or you're holding them to a higher standard because you're biased. That may not have anything to do with race in that case. But once again, that bias leans you. We laugh about this all the time, people who are Republican or Democrat. And we're not going to tell you what we are because we don't want anybody half the world to hate us. So we're just going to leave it alone. But basically what happens is we see a Republican go, "Oh, well, President Trump is doing this. It's amazing."
Right.
And a Democrat goes, "President Trump is doing this. It's awful." And then a Republican sees candidate Biden. What he's doing is awful. And it's just this whole idea of whatever comes from my side, I got 100% go with it. And you're going, "Hey, how about a little... step back, a little moderation," and go, "Let me actually look at this from a perspective that's not biased, and let me see it for what it really is." Which I think the unrest has taken place recently has helped some people kind of step out of their bias and go, "Oh, wow,
right.
Let me look at this for what it really is. There is no tendency here. I'm just going to take a look at it."
I like how you touched on how bias could, it doesn't have to necessarily be race.
Yeah.
It could be anything. It could be, like you said, "I don't like how this person walks when he walks into the station."
Yeah.
I remember, I got hired when I was 20 years old, you know, so it was a different type of, you know, level mentality that I had when I walked in. And I definitely can tell people came to me, you know, years later and said, "Man, when you walked in, you just seemed like you didn't, like how you perceived yourself." And they had a specific bias towards me because how I acted.
Yeah.
You know, and the best thing about biases is it actually goes away when you actually talk to the person and you get to know the person.
Yeah.
Because one person could think that you're a certain way until they work a 24-hour shift with you and say, man, you know, everything that I've heard about you or everything that, you know, that I thought that I seen you when you were at a different station, now I'm working with you, man, you're totally different.
Yeah.
And it's happened to me so many times in my career.
Well, and you're, how tall are you?
I'm 6'4".
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think so.
I'm 5'11".
220?
180. I wish I was 220. But so, and you had played basketball all through high school. And did you play any college ball?
I did not. I didn't play any college ball.
But you had actually played here locally. We'll talk about that a little bit later. So you've got probably got some confidence from playing sports.
Right.
You're tall. You walk in and probably some people go, even if you didn't do anything wrong, some people are like, no, look at that guy. Thinks he's all that probably.
Exactly.
And we get that same thing. How about the biases against millennials? Oh, mm-hmm. my goodness. Mm-hmm. People come into these new department hires and go, oh, those millennials. Hold on. That's a prejudice and a bias. I mean, you're literally going, hey, because of who you are, mm-hmm. we're going to assume you're lazy. We're going to assume, hey, that's not how this works.
And I always tell people who make fun of millennials is that millennials didn't raise themselves either.
There's actually, for those people who are looking for resources, there's a great, it's a 17-minute video clip mm-hmm. with Simon Sinek talking about why millennials are the way they are. And basically they were like parents. And he goes through parents and society and what we have done. Mm-hmm. Everyone gets a trophy. Mm-hmm. And a millennial who wants to literally go, I'm here day one. How do I become the CEO? And like, well, you have to work to, no, I don't want to do that. And people get mad at them. They're like, no, they want to change the world. Mm-hmm. That's not a bad thing. How do we start to channel that? So that's another example of a bias. And there's some really good ones out there. Another one that we don't ever want to talk about is sexism. This is something that has been rampant in first responder world mm-hmm. for a long time. Military, police, fire, and I don't think there's any way to get around that. It's just been the way it is. Sexism, the word actually means prejudice or discrimination based on sex. I don't think I necessarily have to give anybody the definition. Right. But the second part of the definition from Webster says behaviors, conditions, or attitudes that foster stereotypes of social roles based on sex. I thought that was an interesting part of the definition that I hadn't really thought about before. It's actually, what are we doing that actually continue to reinforce those mm-hmm. stereotypes? The stereotypes that say, hey, a female can't do the job of a firefighter. Well, let me tell you, I know you work at a different department than I do, but we both have some women we work with who are awesome, who can do just as good a job as I do and better.
Yep,
I know at the gym where I work out, my wife mm-hmm. shows me up all the time. That I literally look at her weight and I'm like, okay, how do I do 5 to 10 pounds less than that? Because mm-hmm. you're stronger than me.
Right.
That's how it is. And you're not as old and joints aren't as shaky and all that other stuff. I'm only saying that because she's in the room right now helping with this class. So, but obviously it's that stereotype thing. Like we've had that thing. And we've talked before about the fact, what happens when, you get 2 or 3 females on a truck and what's the first response from everybody in the department? Oh no, they're not going to be able to pull somebody out of a building. Or have you seen those girls work out? Like, this is what we've done. And mm-hmm. I think we're getting better. Mm-hmm. And I think as a whole, the first responder world has done a better job of this, but this is a real thing.
Yeah, I definitely think that we're getting better in the culture of the fire service when it comes to women. With CrossFit and all the, you know, women that are as strong as they are nowadays, I definitely have a admiration because they have to actually work a lot harder sometimes to push the weight and to physically be at the level of, you know, a men strong-wise to do the job.
Yeah, and I think when you start to get into leadership roles, what I found is some of the females that take leadership roles do a lot better job mm-hmm. than some of them because of their experience, their life experience, what they bring in that balance. I've watched some of that happen because mm-hmm. we used to say, well, the better leader is going to be the man. Nobody would ever say that, but that's what would happen. Mm-hmm. Now we're in a culture where we're like, hey, whoever the best person is for the job, mm-hmm. that's what it's going to be.
Right. Leadership also is defined where if you do have, let's say, anybody, it doesn't even matter what race, you know, black, white, female, if they're in your station and they can't do something, as a leader, it's your job to, you know, get them to the point where they can do it, you know, and you have to know the limitations of your crew. You have to know what people are good at and what they're not, you know, good at, which is a joint collaboration with the whole station, you know.
Look at that, bringing you leadership principles on top of harassment and diversity. That's why I brought this guy here. I love that because we often will, I've had a few individuals who are like, well, that guy or that girl just doesn't get it. They don't understand it. And they've judged them that. And my response to them always is the same thing you just said, which is, so what have you done to help them?
Exactly.
Well, the last thing I want is that person to show up on a call. Well, then what have you done to help them with their protocols? Well, that person can't even throw a ladder. Well, have you taken them out to throw a ladder?
Right.
Now, if we do all of those things and someone can't do the job and they fail, and they fail on their own with all the help we've given them, then so be it. But we can't continue to judge people and then go, well, it's off me. They just weren't trained any better than that. The last word we're going to define is stereotype. Love this word because, man, we all do this. Mm-hmm. Even if you don't have a racist bone in your body, you don't discriminate. Stereotypes are real. Yeah, that's just what it is. The definition is a plate cast from a printing surface. That's the actual definition. But it says a standardized mental picture that is held in common by members of a group and that represents an oversimplified opinion, prejudiced attitude, or uncritical judgment. And I remember I took a class one time from a guy, his name is Rick Caldwell, a phenomenal instructor in this world. And he taught me a lot about diversity and he did this thing, and he goes, okay, so, and he would just say, everybody answer, and he goes, all, and he would say a group, and he goes, all women are, right, all men are, all Asians are, all Black people are, all white, and it was hysterical because you're going, I don't know. Okay. But then he switched it and he said, okay, these people are known to be, and then you're going, well, I know what the answer to that one is, because he would say, these people are known to be good at math and are Asians. These people are known to be very frugal with their money, Jewish people. And he and these are not bad stereotypes, they're just stereotypes. And then it was funny because he goes, okay, how many of you in this class are of Asian descent? So one guy raises his hand, he goes, are you good at math? He goes, no, I'm horrible at math. And he laughed and he goes, you know, that's what it is. And he goes, that's kind of this whole idea of stereotype is we say there is this, and I like the word generalization. Is there a generalization? Yes, there probably is. And the people who live up to some of those stereotypes kind of chuckle about them. I have friends who live up to some of these stereotypes. I live up to the white man can't jump stereotype. I can tell you that right now. Love the game of basketball. I was actually very good at it, but I couldn't jump. I remember being able to touch the rim and actually dunk a tennis ball for about 10 minutes one time in my life. I got to the peak of my athletic career. Well, that's a stereotype. Okay, that's what it is. That's how it works. It might actually be the extra poundage I was carrying as well, but that's a whole other conversation for another time. The stereotypes are something people live up to, but we also can't put people into that. We can't say, okay, you fit in this mold.
You can't lump them all in one and say that is exactly it forever.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Well, I think about, like, for you, we just talked about basketball. You're 6'4", Black man.
Yeah.
What if you played chess and never played basketball in your life? Could you imagine walking down the street being like, hey, you're on my team?
Right. I actually did play chess too.
That doesn't surprise me at all. Knowing you as long as I've known you, that doesn't surprise me. We were walking through the store the other day, my daughter's fiance and I are walking through Publix, and this guy is walking in front of us, and he is probably all of 6'6", 6'7". I mean he's a big dude,
right?
And I looked at him, like, I bet he's a good basketball player. And Chris goes, are you sure? I'm kidding. I have no idea. But I said, I guarantee you everybody assumes that guy thinks is a basketball player. He's just big, tall dude. And you're thinking, of course you played basketball.
You hope.
Well, maybe. Yeah, exactly. Don't waste it.
Right.
But the stereotypes are things that can get us in trouble. Because even for us, the fire department culture, not every firefighter is adrenaline driven, type A personality. Right. Got to go into the fire. We're all different. And so even that, I found, I run some of our professional development stuff, help people with promotional exam stuff. I've seen people go, I'm going to go be a driver. Okay, why do you want to be a driver? Well, it's a great job. And I look at them and I go, why do you think you're going to be a good driver? You're like me. You have no mechanical inclination.
Right.
You don't know anything about automotive stuff. You're going to have to troubleshoot on a scene how to get that. And I'm like, I'm not an engineering brain. I'm like, if I know how it works, great. If it stops working, I'm going to be like, is there somebody available to do this for me? But then I've also seen people that are like really, really good at the EMS side, but they've been taught that firefighters don't like EMS.
Right.
And I go, hey, you're good at it. Go that route. Why not? You're going to be amazing at it. So we stereotype ourselves and others. And I think it just basically puts limitations on us.
I agree.
All right. So what we're going to do now is we're going to shift to a little bit of some demographics. So in the United States, obviously we have a diversity. I know my dad was a history teacher and taught us all the time about the melting pot, you know, the great American experiment, like all of these things. And if you really look at the latest data I was able to pull up is about 60% of the United States population is white. I don't think that surprises anybody. The next biggest is Hispanic, which is 18%. The next biggest after that is Black, which is 13%. And then you get into Asian 5.3, and then it gets into the two or more ethnicities, Hawaiian, some of those that are other, some of the other categories. Not that we're limiting or saying they're lower, but just this is the numbers that are there. Well, we live in a predominantly white culture. That's just how it is. Mm-hmm. What does that look like for us? Well, it's important to understand those are the numbers, but it's also interesting to look, if you look at some of the demographic changes over the years, some of what used to be and some of what is now, you can actually look at sites online. I think one of them is called City Data. And you can actually go to a city and it'll show you. And I've looked at places because we're looking, you know, hey, when am I going to retire one day?
Right.
Where am I going to go? And I remember just looking to see how much crime. And one of the things they'll show you is the percentages. I remember looking at one of the cities up in North Carolina that I was looking at, 98.6% white. And I went, oh my goodness. I'm like I thought I grew up in a fairly white dominant culture where I was at in the Missouri area, but I'm like 98 point something percent. Yeah. And I'm like, wow, that would not be fun. Like to me, that just seems boring. I mean, now there are probably people who are like, oh, yeah. Hey, my people. Just like there are probably black people going, oh, there's a place with 86%. I'm going there.
Or I'm not going there.
You said that, not me. So as the United States shows a melting pot and diversity, each community is going to be different. That's important to understand. But what's really important to understand is where do we each individually stand?
Right.
And do I have any racism within me? Do I have any prejudice? Do I have any bias? Do I have any preconceived notions, stereotypes, generalizations that are causing me issues with the people around me? We're going to talk today about fire department, first responder culture. What we're really talking about is each individual person. Are there stations that you work at that probably have some racist tendencies in them? Yeah, probably. Are there some that have none? Probably. Because everybody's different, because this is made up of people. The other thing I find is that people say, well, because you grew up this way, you're going to be biased or prejudiced, which is another stereotype. Mm-hmm. Because you grew up this way, you won't be because of how you grew up. I remember talking a while back about the fact that people know I'm a Kansas City Chiefs fan, a huge Pat Mahomes fan. And when all the racial tension kind of kicked into high gear after George Floyd's death, it was about a week later, I think, Mahomes posted something I thought was really well thought out. And he was talking about the fact that he grew up with a black father and a white mother. Mm-hmm. And he grew up in locker rooms and he grew up with that diverse culture. Because we all know when you're playing sports, for the most part, you couldn't care less. I just want that guy or girl to be able to play well with me and do their thing. It's the same thing the fire service does for us. Mm-hmm. Like, I just want that person to be able to go into the building. I don't care what their gender is. I don't care what their religious preference is. Can they go into the building and do the job with me and come back out? And he was sharing all this. And he finished by saying, I'd like for one day for my future kids to live in a world where we get along. It was really well done. And the comments below it were just blowing this dude up. Because, it was comments like, well, of course, silver spoon in your mouth. Your dad was a professional athlete. Or, oh, well, you only have one black parent, so you don't know any better. The list went on and on and on. And I'm like, this guy's doing his best. And we make those preconceived notions about others, too. And especially during this period of unrest that we've had, along with the pandemic and no sports to distract us and all those things, we've judged other people's responses to these things. Have you seen that as well? We've talked about that a little bit.
Yeah, I think that the social media aspect has really, you know, taken it to a whole nother level. Like, people wouldn't normally say that those type of things to people's face to face.
Oh yeah, never.
So it's you got to kind of take it with a grain of salt. You know, it's not, I don't call it the end all be all, but it's definitely something to pay attention to and, you know, see where the climate is going.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that we have to give people grace. We have to go, okay. The people are trying to be involved. They're trying to do what they can do. Let's be polite, be nice, be kind, all those things. We're going to talk today specifically about diversity, what it looks like, how we may be able to create a little more of it. We're going to talk a little about harassment, what it looks like. And some of that will be some of those, hey, this is literally what a policy states. Right. This is what an ordinance states. We both work at two different departments down here who have similar policies, but there are some differences. We'll talk about what some of those things are. Just so you understand that it may be that your department has a very, very robust program. You've thought about it. You're proactive. That's great. Or you may have one that hasn't done anything at all. Right. What can you do individually to try to help that? We'll talk a little bit about hostile work environment. I remember hearing the first time I heard hostile work environment, I thought, well, who would ever create a hostile work? Who's going to be hostile?
Right.
Well, most people don't intend to be hostile, but their actions create an environment that is because they just don't know how to do it.
Or their biases or prejudices create that hostile work environment where someone doesn't feel comfortable in the situation that they're in.
And they're going, I'm not hostile. This is how I believe. And so we'll talk a little bit about all that as well. So we hope that this is going to help you a little bit. We hope that we get you kind of in a direction. We're going to share some of our personal stories as well. We're going to talk a little bit about how we grew up and even those differences we've had, and how when done the right way, those differences can bring people together and help others learn about different cultures, but also how we've seen the fire service change, how that fire department culture has gotten better and really has improved, even though there are things we can do better.
Definitely.
So we hope this helps you a little bit. We hope it encourages you as we talk through this process today. So one of the things that is important in this topic and conversation is where you come from. And all of us have to do an evaluation of that, because those definitions we just talked about come from a certain place. And so we're going to talk a little bit about kind of how we grew up. So just we'll kind of share this. I grew up in Missouri, and just so everybody knows, Kansas City is in Missouri. It's also in Kansas, even though President Trump congratulated the Chiefs on the great state of Kansas. It is Missouri. And Pat Mahomes had a great shirt that showed it. I'm trying to still get it, actually. I think it's awesome. It is. There's a big city, and it's in the middle. But I didn't grow up in downtown Kansas City. I grew up in kind of the outskirts, the suburbs. And I grew up, I went to a private school. Now it sounds like, oh, we went to a private school. Well, my dad was a teacher at the private school, so I got free education.
Right.
Is basically what happened. As a result of that, that's where I was. And I grew up at the time, I didn't realize it at the time, but I basically grew up in white world. I did not know at the time that was the case, just what I knew. There's a couple people in my school, in my class. There was a couple people each class that had a little bit of diversity. There was like two black kids, one Hispanic kids, but literally that was it out of a class of 30, 35 people. Very small, very, and then I also grew up very religious. Grew up in a very in a church that was very, 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 I don't know how many times I can say very, conservative, extremely, extremely, very, very extremely, whatever, and really taught all of that, and my parents were involved in it, so that's how I grew up. And it was when I went away to college, didn't really see a lot more diversity, because I went to a religious school that was still very largely predominantly white. In fact, did not catch at the time, and because it didn't matter to me, I didn't know any different. But at the time I went there, this is I'm going to tell how old I am, 1992, still had a policy against interracial dating at this college I went to. See, I saw the eyes. Like, and at the time I'm like, that's weird. Why would you do it? Like, I didn't care. I didn't know any different, but I was like, wait, that's kind of weird. Seems kind of weird to me, but okay, whatever. And it was when I graduated from college and moved to South Florida, West Palm Beach. That's, and I'm like, whoa, it's a lot of different people. And actually, I think a lot of people from where I came from would have been like, well, that's going to be weird. It really was kind of cool right away. The church I came to was very, very inclusive of everybody. And all the churches I've been a part of since have been very inclusive and want people to come from all different backgrounds and diversities, even different faiths. Like, hey, we want to encourage you to be a part of this. But I didn't know any different. And then I drove to Miami the first time and got lost. I'll never forget it. I was 22 years old, trying to go down there and see a World Cup game. I will never forget being lost, not sure where we were going. Because, you know, before your GPS, I mean, I had a map printed out, but I couldn't figure it out, couldn't find it. And I'm thinking, how hard could it be to find a stadium? Well, the Orange Bowl was like low, it was in the middle of a city. And if you haven't been there before, you definitely would know it's hard to find. And finally started asking for directions, and not a single person spoke English. Not one. And I got frustrated. I remember thinking, we're in America. Like, that's how I felt. Finally found it, missed part of the first part of the game, and finally got to the game. And then there were two games, got to see the second game, got to see Brazil play. It was a phenomenal experience. But I remember kind of those types of things. All the billboards were in Spanish. And I remember it frustrating me. Doesn't frustrate me anymore. It's kind of ironic where we get to, but I remember it really bothered me because of how I grew up and where I grew up. But I remember that frustration leading to, well, why is it different? How did I grow up? And I remember actually the college I went to changing their policy a couple of years after I graduated and being like, oh, great, finally. How far behind were we? Like, that's kind of how I grew up. So I'd love for you to share a little about how you grew up, because I know it was very similar.
Yeah, no, definitely not. So I actually grew up in Miami. I grew up close to downtown, you know, where I was born and raised. And then I moved to Broward, which is kind of like an extension of Miami.
Yeah.
Every school that I've went to since I was in elementary school all the way to high school was always, you know, mixed. Actually, the demographics were more Spanish than, you know, and black people in the class, pretty much white or Caucasian was the minority.
Yeah.
And I grew up in a time where, you know, people's race really didn't matter. You know, we didn't, I graduated high school in 2006. So, you know, it never was a, never was even a topic.
Yeah.
My parents, they were in the medical field. My dad was a fireman. He was in the fire service. He was a paramedic, one of the first paramedics in the city of Miami. And my mom was a nurse. So I was always, you know, hanging around them. I was always, you know, meeting different type of people and, you know, people who they worked with. And that's pretty much it.
Yeah. Well, and you bring up a good point. Like I said, my story about Miami was the first time I'd been there was right. a 22-year-old kid. And I'm like, where am I at?
Yeah.
I didn't feel like I was even in America at the time based on what my experience of America was.
And that was my experience.
Yeah.
My experience was America was always a melting pot.
Yeah.
A true melting pot until I actually got older and, you know, I traveled around the U.S. and I kind of realized that Miami is definitely a...
It's a unique place. Yeah, if you've never been to Miami, I mean, there's sections like Little Havana.
Mm-hmm.
And like for me, finally 2 or 3 years later, had some friends who took me down there mm-hmm. and I got to experience it. Man, I love the culture.
Yeah.
It was funny. We walked into a place, a restaurant, and it was supposed to be, you know, the people are supposed to come over and serve, you know, mm-hmm. give us the stuff and everything. And they're just kind of chilling out. And I'm thinking they're going to come over and give it. They finally, a couple minutes later, came over and, mm-hmm. and they just real chill, real laid back. And at first it was frustrating. Then I realized they didn't care what time it was.
Right.
Did not care at all. And I'm telling you, the best food ever in my life. Mm-hmm. It was phenomenal. It was amazing. Mm-hmm. And you get exposed to different foods and different right. cultures. And you see all the older retired guys out there outside playing dominoes, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And everybody's like, where I'm from, dominoes. Those things like flick over and no, there's it's no, a game. Like you, and you learn different cultures. There's mm-hmm. so much beauty in them.
Mm-hmm.
Listen, it's not to say there's not beauty in the culture I grew up right. in. There's just a different beauty. Right. It's a different culture. But what we find is that lack of melting pot or the melting pot starts to shape us.
Right.
And what that does is when you get to the fire department, which is one of the ultimate melting mm-hmm. pots, because I think the other first responder world does it as well, but the firefighters, you're living together for 24 hours. It's a very unique situation. So diversity becomes something that happens,
yeah.
but the appreciation of the diversity isn't something that necessarily happens automatically mm-hmm. because you get people who love it and, right. and enjoy it and love the fact that you're together with different people mm-hmm. and you get others who just don't like it.
Right.
And if that person's in charge of the station
mm-hmm.
or that person's the unofficial leader, the morale booster or killer,
mm-hmm.
then that starts to develop what happens at that station level. And that's where we start to get into issues. So being 20 years old and getting the job, first of all, I dislike everybody who did that when they were 20 because I wish I did it when I was right. 20 because I laugh about people get along their career and I'm like, well, we're the same point in our career and you're mm-hmm. 10 years younger than me. That's just amazing to me. So congratulations on that. But the other thing that happens is a 20-year-old kid, we mentioned earlier, coming into this culture, especially probably being a little more confident in the culture because your dad was a firefighter. So mm-hmm. I'm guessing, is that kind of how it happened for you? Or
definitely. I pretty much after basketball was over, I said, you know what? I wanted to be in the fire service, and I just went for it.
Yeah.
And I definitely knew the culture, you know, not growing up in the stations, but you know, frequenting the stations
yeah, yeah.
pretty often. And I kind of knew what it was, and it reminded me of sports. And how I saw it was, you know, it doesn't matter, you know, who you are, as long as, you know, teamwork and here for a common purpose.
Yeah.
That it was the same, but there was a lot of aspects that I didn't account for.
Like what? Like, give us some of those examples.
Different things like my personality and how I came up and, you know, some of the people that were there, they might have thought a little bit different about, like you said, you see a 20-year-old, you know, kid come into the station and they're like, oh, he's 20 years old. He doesn't really belong here. He's never worked a job.
And yeah.
They ask me, what did I do before this? I went to high school and I worked at Publix. And they're looking at you like, you know, he doesn't deserve, he hasn't lived life yet
yeah.
to be here, because we had a lot of people who, you know, did work many jobs before they came to the fire service. Like fire service, they might have got in their 30s. They might have went to war yeah. and then came back. And now, you know, the fire service was their yeah. job when they came back. So it's a totally different life experience.
Yeah, and I find that people who are raised by first responders, one of two directions, either really appreciate it and have been mm-hmm. trained all the way along, or think, oh, this is my birthright and I'm just going to treat right. it like so. So people don't know how to respond to that either. Well, I know for me, I became a teacher. I was a high school teacher for a few years coming out of college, and then shifted into some nonprofit fundraising, started to learn a little more about the world, and then a little bit of the culture shock of getting into the fire service and really seeing just a different world and different behavior, different mm-hmm. temperament and personalities. we are all molded and formed and shaped by the people that influence us. Right. Our parents, our coaches, our teachers, mm-hmm. our friends, all those people. You had a little different experience too because you had a stepfather that came into your life. Yeah. So kind of talk about how that shifted a little bit for you.
Yeah, so when my stepdad came into my life, pretty much he was a 26, 27-year-old, you know, white man about to be my stepfather. And he had to learn culturally a lot in a very short amount of time.
Yeah.
Which he did awesome. He was one of my best, you know, mentors myself.
Oh, cool.
But, you know, just having that aspect, I got to experience cultures that other people don't because yeah. I got the best of both worlds. I got everything.
Yeah, well, and being in Miami, South Florida, you're getting pieces of all right. cultures there too. And I think that's kind of what helps you understand and probably be a little less biased naturally. Exactly. And you and I have talked before, you work really hard not to mm-hmm. be any. I think we both really do the best job we can mm-hmm. at it. But sometimes it's going to be innate. Some people, mm-hmm. you're going to find yourself very little bias or very little prejudice in your life because you've had great experiences right. with so many different people. Some people have a horrible experience mm-hmm. with one group of people. I remember my grandfather, who passed away many years ago, fighting in World War II. He did not like anyone that was anywhere associated with Japanese culture. Well, he was fighting against them.
Right.
And I remember my dad asking about a vehicle purchase. Hey, he was getting some advice. Mm-hmm. And he goes, no, it's a Japanese car. And my dad's like, oh.
Right.
But I get it. I understand mm-hmm. where you're coming from. Now, hopefully you can work through some of those and realize not everybody's associated with that. But that's just one example of how some people have a bad experience and we have to work through it. If you've had great experiences with multiple cultures, mm-hmm. enjoy it.
Right.
Love it. And I think as a firefighter, we get more of that. Mm-hmm. We get some of the good cultural right. experiences.
For me, it allowed me to actually call out what's right and what's wrong.
Oh.
Knowing, you know, both sides of the cultures, knowing, you know, the stereotypes that we talked about and knowing the prejudices that, you know, both sides might have, I actually got to be in the driver's seat to see, you know, what was right and what was wrong. And that helped me in my career, you know, calling it out if I saw it and I didn't mind seeing
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Well, you're 6'4" and scare me. So I'll listen to whatever you say. So I'm just kidding. I think that you've done a good job of that. And that's one of the reasons I've asked you to come on and teach with me because I've heard you do that. And you have to, in this culture, in this world, in this political and social climate, you have to be able to call out truth mm-hmm. and right and wrong. You have to be able to say right is right, wrong is wrong, and not be biased on it. Be able to, as I said earlier, to be able to look at a political party person and say that part's good, that part's bad. Like
right.
to be able to understand that and mm-hmm. not let everything be filtered through the colored, the rose-colored glasses of, okay, this is what I see all the time. Mm-hmm. I think that's where we're trying to get to. And I know for each of us, we've been through those worlds. And now in the fire department, we see a little more of that. And what's happened today in the fire service is we still do have racism. We still do have issues. A lot of that racism and bias and prejudice comes from the living quarters. I mean, would you agree? I think that's where we see it. I don't see a lot of it on calls. I don't see a lot of it when we respond to emergencies because mm-hmm. we tend to, first responders tend to do a really good job of going, it's time to go do the job. It's time to go to respond to this call. It's time to go make this happen. Mm-hmm. But what we see is in the inner workings of the fire station, now we're interacting with people. Right. And so we have this team culture you mentioned earlier. Love the team culture. Mm-hmm. The team culture also has some issues with it. Because what happens? We end up with what we hear locker room talk, right? So you hear that you get comfortable with people and you go, hey, I think I can joke with this person mm-hmm. about whatever it is. And if you're close and have a good relationship, you probably can. Mm-hmm. But some people can still step over lines and go, okay, right. well, I'm starting to offend people. Mm-hmm. How do we balance that? How do we help people understand mm-hmm. that there are certain people in this fire service that are going to be your family? And there's other people who are going to be your coworkers.
Right.
And I think people have a hard time understanding and getting that balance.
Mm-hmm. I think respect is number one.
Yeah.
Respect. You have to actually get to know the person before you have that type of locker room talk. Because even though locker room talk might be acceptable in the station, it might not be acceptable on policy
yeah.
or the city or the county's
True.
Policy.
Very good.
And you know, and there's just a line you have to draw, or especially you know being a firefighter or being an officer, there might be being a firefighter, you might be able to joke about something, but being an officer, it's just something you don't want to touch, because by doing that, now you're opening up an even bigger can of worms.
You know? Yeah, and I think you bring a good point. Your department policy trumps all. I mean, that's your department policy probably has, we talked before, if you look at our policy at my department, your policy, I mean, there's lists, the one that's for diversity, sexual harassment has lists like Equal Pay Act of 1963, Florida Civil Rights Act of 1992, mm-hmm. Title VII of Civil Rights Act of 1964, amended, Americans with Disability Act, Age Discrimination Employment Act, Vietnam Veterans Readjustment Assistance, and then the Rehabilitation Act. And then you also have your department specific. This is the county one. This is the ethics one. Right. I know my department, we have an ethics training once a year that we are required to take. No. We're more ethical than you, so we have to. Ours is probably longer. I think it's like an hour, just under an hour. And you're watching this going, I just watched this last year. But we have to remind ourselves, because there's policies that have to be. We have policies now in departments about how to accept donations. Yeah, and whether you can accept donations, and whether it can be, and I'm like, people used to just always come by the fire station and go, hey, we want to help with this, or we can't do that anymore. There has to be a way to do it, because, and the reason for all of this is because somebody does it wrong.
Right.
We always know that if there's a policy, it's named after someone. Mm-hmm. Almost every one of the policies has a name that attached, because the backing policy has that guy's name, because he constantly backed into things and he ran over two bay doors and he backed into something else. And then that girl did. We all have those. Mm-hmm. So there's a reason for this stuff. And some of it's not fire department. Some of it is just the world in general. We have to get better at these things. And these are all things designed to protect us. As you study them, your department policies are designed to make sure that you and the person next to you have equal footing for your employment opportunities, for your raises, for your promotions. All of these things allow you to be on equal footing if done right. They're not intended to go, well, you can't have any more fun anymore. But you have to determine who those people are that you can have fun. And once again, I want to make sure we're clear. Locker room talk does not mean talking badly about other people. Yeah, I know back when the election was happening and Trump said his thing there. Oh, it's locker room talk. And I remember LeBron James the first time, whoa, whoa, whoa. We don't talk like that in the locker room. And I'm like, well, he might, but he's not going to say that. But the point is, you have to determine what's right and wrong. And we're not saying just say whatever you want. Mm-hmm. But there is that locker room culture, that team culture, that's actually really good. Mm-hmm. As long as we are respecting other people, as long as we are building each other up. And I think that's what I've found is the fire stations, not even fire departments, the fire stations, the fire units who do it right, encourage each other. They make each other better. They grow. They train together. Mm-hmm. And in doing that, they probably get to know each other on a personal level. It's where they can joke with each other and give little jabs and things like that. You have to make sure that you respect people in those times, though.
Agreed.
One of the other things we want to talk about a little bit is in the harassment side of things, it doesn't have to be something that's intentional to be harassment or to be considered racism.
Right.
What we have to do is we have to take people's perception into play. And what I mean by that is this. If you want to make a joke, you want to make a comment, you have to look at the people around you and go, the joke I'm making, is there any possibility of the fact that somebody else might take offense to that?
Right.
Now, some people are going to hear that and go, well, everybody's offended all the time. And I get that there's a little bit of that going on all over the world with everything. But you still have a responsibility to treat people with respect. Mm-hmm. You and I talked the other day, and I thought it was great, the comment you made about the difference between just a prejudice against, or maybe not even prejudice, maybe the right term is just a judgment, a correct judgment against something, versus racism,
right?
And maybe the good old boy system versus racism. And I use boys not to be sexist here, but that's the kind of terminology. So to kind of explain how that works, because a lot of people get confused on those concepts.
Mm-hmm. I think when you define good old boy, the, you know, quote unquote good old boy, I think that is it's a geographical definition, because the good old boy in, let's say, Ocala might be a different good old boy than Miami, and good old boy in Atlanta might be different than North Carolina. Like you said before, if you have 99% of the population and the department is a certain type of demographic, that's what you're going to have. So by having those groups be the predominant majority, it can make the people who are minorities feel a certain type of way when it comes to let's say, for example, let's say you have a bid at your station. You're the captain and you have two people who just left because of promotions. And you already talked to your station, talked to a couple people, and they're like, hey, we want you. But then you find out someone else is wanting to get in the station. And they kind of go to him and say, hey, if I was you, I wouldn't put that bid in. We kind of know who we want. That person is now feeling like, well, I feel alienated now.
Yeah.
I can't go in there. That's an example of a good old boy.
Yeah.
You know? And it doesn't always have to be race.
Yeah.
It could be affiliation. It could be, you know, things that you like to do, interests. You might have a group that wants to go mini season and they love lobstering. And, you know, you get a guy that goes in the station who doesn't.
Yeah.
Lobster.
Yeah.
And
has nothing to do with you.
Has nothing to do with you. But sometimes it does.
Yeah.
Sometimes you have, you know, a group of people who, let's say if I walked into a department and I had no one, no captains or no chief officers, you know, African American, and mm-hmm. I'm a young person in the department, I can easily say, oh man, that's just good old boy. Is it really good old boy? It's my perception.
Yeah.
But is it really good old boy? Now, if you have an equal amount of people who put in for the spot and everybody is qualified and then they continue to choose the same one over and over, then someone has a lot, you know, easy to stand on and say, all right, that's good old boy.
Yeah. And then at some point it can become a racist prejudice thing. And we've talked about this before. And once again, like what he's describing, what you're describing, Brandon, is different than my department. We don't actually have that opportunity to really do that. You either have a bid or you don't. And
we don't even bid at my station.
I know.
It was just an example.
Yours is they actually place people. We don't even do it. So every department is different too. Mm-hmm. So understand that. But we've talked about the fact that your situation is based on where you're at. Obviously, mm-hmm. we get it. Mm-hmm. But also, your perception can be changed. And I had a great example. Vince made the comment, the guy who was on the show a while back, and you know Vince, and he mm-hmm. made the comment that there was a play, I think, that all of his family was doing. So basically, the family and a church or a group, I don't remember exactly, mm-hmm. but the point was he invited the guy that works with him.
Right.
He was white.
Mm-hmm.
Vince is black. And he invited this guy, and he and his family came, and they were the only white people in the building. And he was like, and he goes, the play was awesome. Mm-hmm. You know, it was great. And he afterwards, he talked to Vince. He goes, well, that was kind of weird being the only one. He goes, mm-hmm. well, welcome to my world. He goes, what do you mean? He goes, every time you guys do something, you're not doing anything wrong. Mm-hmm. It's all the firefighters. But all the firefighters at the station were white except for him.
Right.
So he was the only black, and nobody ever thought about that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he went, and all of a sudden that guy, I can't remember the guy's name, but his comment was, huh. Now, sometimes we need to be awakened to that and just go, oh, there are people who feel a certain way because of how it works. And the second part of this is, I think as departments, we have to do a better job of creating that environment that allows people to have someone to look at. You made the great comment. You're a young guy, you're a 20-year-old black man, you come in and you're looking at your leadership and you're going, okay, there's nobody up there for me to look at that's like mm-hmm. me. One of the things that I've talked about before is whether it's in a new hire, a recruit academy, anything along those lines, you need to have people that represent the people mm-hmm. you're training. So the military has started to do a really good job at this.
Right.
They make sure that if there's a female in that group, there's a female at least that's mm-hmm. an instructor to look at. There's a black man, an Asian, they all mm-hmm. have someone that they can go, oh, they've done it.
Mm-hmm.
Because the whole point is, even taking the sexism thing we talked about earlier, why not? Why would we let that girl continue to feel like, well, I don't know if I can do this physically?
Right. Right.
Instead, we have the instructor up there who's like, mm-hmm. I'll be the best and I'll show you that I can do it and give right. you someone to follow. Mm-hmm. We need people to model this, which is why we need departments to, we always talk, people talk about, oh, affirmative action or what. Mm-hmm. We're not talking about any of that. What we're talking about is create the pool that mm-hmm. gets a little bigger and let's
right.
start pushing individuals along to go, you need to get to that position, not for
exactly.
you.
For the
you need to get that position for the department for the other people
exactly.
following you. So that one day,
right.
maybe it takes 15 years,
right.
but one day, all of a sudden, there's this rainbow of people.
Right. And, like you said, credentialed and qualified
yes.
people who,
yes.
like you have, but you have to start, you have to put that objective into place. You have to, like you said, kind of light a fire under the organization to strive better. So
yeah.
everybody is equally able to do the job.
Yes.
And by doing that, that will eliminate the good old boy system
yeah.
if there ever was.
And yeah, and you, like you said, credentialed, qualified.
Right.
And what we do is we make sure everybody gets that so
exactly.
that you start to build this group. Because we are getting more of the melting pot of mm-hmm. people applying, So now that we're doing that, now we start to let that bubble up. Right. And I think those are things that can be done at any department. And you're not going to change it tomorrow. Don't get me wrong. You won't. But you can change it over time. And we all, every one of us, should feel like, if I'm the most qualified person for this job, I should be able to get it.
Right.
But what's happened in the past is people that are not white have had the situation where they've not been able to get that, even though they're qualified, because they've been brought down one notch or two notches because of the color of their skin, their background, or maybe even an unintentional bias, a non-cognitive bias, as you taught me. Threw that one out there. But now what has happened is we have people that are afraid. There are a lot of people who are afraid because they're going, well, if we do this, then all white people are going to be down here.
Right.
No. And it's like, whoa, that's not what we're saying. What we need to do is get to the point where we start to build people up and start to put people in positions so that we can start to raise the level so that all of us are credentialed, all of us are qualified, especially in this world of firefighting where we all know what's expected.
Right.
And we all know what the qualifications are. Let's go get them. The Florida has their state requirements. Go get your fire officer. Let's help them do it.
It brings up the department as well. It makes the department better.
Yeah, we get people with degrees. We start changing. Yeah. That's how we start to change this. And that's where you have leaders who are of the same mind with different backgrounds. Because if you and I from the different backgrounds can work together at a place, then what happens is we bring our different perspectives. Now we have a meeting and we go, hey, we want to do this in the department. And you're like, hey.
Yeah.
That may not be the best way to do that. And I'm like, oh. And then you bring up an idea. I'm like, oh, I may not, because we have different backgrounds. Instead of all of us from the same background going, yes. We talk about yes men and yes women. Mm-hmm. It's not what we need. We need people who have different cultures and different beliefs to help us get to the right point. And by the way, one day we'll work together. I don't know when it'll be, but one day we'll be in the same department somewhere. Maybe if your department takes mine over or mine takes your over or merge. You know, I'm just kidding. So, as we get into more of this topic, so it kind of comes into this situation where we talk about racism, we talk about diversity, and one of the first things we talk about is awareness, right? The awareness level is huge. I don't know that anybody at this point in our country can say they're not aware.
Yeah, everybody's
aware. You mentioned the social media climate. You mentioned the opportunity for to be everywhere. And, I mean, with the recent deaths of individuals who have died either at the hand of a police shooting or of or some other type of incident. We saw the one in Georgia. Man, that was, I forget how long ago these things are now. We're talking probably months and months ago. All of these individuals cause us to have conversations. I know I was struggling with how to respond after Ahmaud Arbery. I was struggling with how to respond because I was kind of watching, trying to see, and I reached out to a couple people like, hey, how do you do this? Because I can't see everything and I don't want to jump to conclusions, but I know I'm upset and angry about what happened. And then very shortly thereafter, George Floyd dies. And what I did was I started a group text with you and I think five other black male firefighters, just because you guys are people I respect and went, hey, I need to ask some questions. And it was great because not all of you agreed on everything. It's okay. But we had some individual conversations. And you brought up some great points about the awareness level of things and how not everything is as it appears. And having response is important. And the conversation is really the important part.
Right.
So share a little bit about kind of what we discussed and kind of how we helped each other during that time.
Yeah, I look at it. The only way that we're ever going to get to a point or a better point than we are right now is through conversation. And I think in the fire service, we definitely have a better awareness of having those conversations now. You know, maybe 10, 12, 15 years ago, those conversations might be only one way at the table.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember, again, being 20 years old, and I think it was when President Obama got elected. And the stuff that I heard at the table being brand new, it was just, hey, man, let me just keep my head down.
It was all positive, right?
Yeah, I mean, positive, negative, you know, it all depends on which side you're on.
Everybody was really excited about it, right?
Yeah, that's a good thing. An excitement about something. And nowadays, I can see just the climate change where you can actually have those conversations at the station and everybody can put their input. And socially and mentally, we have a different perspective on life where you can have a different opinion. At the firehouse or at the fire station, I could have a different, but like you said, when the bell rings, you go out and you handle what you have to handle. So I think we're in the right direction. I think we're pushing as a fire service with, you know, just how we operate, we're pushing
it.
It
seems like it's starting to change. I think firefighters have a very unique perspective, especially with the situations that have gone on. I mean, think about it. We go treat a patient, and for the vast majority, most of our people don't care what that person looks like. We're going to take care of the patient. We're going to take care of the building, the structure, fire, the emergency, whatever it is. When we come back to our station, maybe there's some biases and things we have to work through, but that's part of how this works. But we also work very closely with cops. So we can have conversations with them about this stuff too. So we have a unique perspective of being able to go have a conversation with one of my black firefighter friends, a female firefighter friend, a cop, white, black, doesn't matter. Right. And I can get multiple different perspectives, and I can hear anger, and I can hear resolve, and I can hear this has never happened again. I can hear sadness. I can hear it all and go, okay, let me take it in. We're in very unique perspective because we don't just, we're not just reaching out. These are people we know. I mean, if you know anything about fire departments, we work closely with police officers and we've seen the good and the bad. We've seen the cops who are awesome, who care about the citizens, who do a great job. And we see the ones where like, that dude's going to do something wrong one day. We've all seen it. So it's a perspective that allows us, and I think should help us all be better, but we have to take advantage of that. We can't just go, well, I don't know how to respond. So I'll tell you, sending that text to you guys, I think I deleted and erased and changed that text like five or six times because I wanted to make sure it was the right message. I wanted to make sure that I was showing respect to all of you guys and going, I really just, I don't have an answer. I just really want to find some answers. Don't be afraid of having those conversations. Don't be afraid to reach out. That's what starts to change this diversity. If we're not here to teach you guys what your department says about sexual harassment, and these are the steps that need to be taken, and these are the steps we're talking about. Just real life, how do you start that? And some of it is in a fire station, you can actually have a conversation about race now and not go, oh, it's gonna, you can actually have a conversation with integrity, with respect, treating people the right way, and find out something new. And we've done that. So you've given me some very good advice. There's been some things you've been like, no, that's not even close. And there's been some things like, no, that's exactly what it should be. The other thing about this is taking into account the perception of the individual. We have people that don't really do that. And kind of talk a little bit about a difference in perspective you might have than someone else coming from your culture and your background, and how someone else might perceive it differently than you.
Well, let's say you get on, and that perception of, like we talked about before, you have a tall black, you know, individual who's coming into the department, 20 years, no work experience. You know, people like to put labels on people, and which is a perception from, you know, someone who's either been here longer than you or someone in like the officer role. And sometimes you get treated a little different, you know, without a doubt. In the fire service, we're all here to always, you know, help, give a helping hand. You know, if I remember a lot of people say, well, we won't help you unless you ask. Like, you have to actually ask. You have to actually be, you know, focused and be driven to succeed. But you also have to take a step back and say, listen, this person is trying to, you know, succeed, and he's doing all the right things. He's doing his POs. He's doing, you know, trying to make himself and the department better. You have to give them the benefit of the doubt. And even if you have your own biases towards a certain person, or you are, you know, racist, you still have to give them the opportunity. And that's what, you know, the fire services has been
doing. I love that. That's great. I think that shows that sometimes we have to step out of our comfort zone and go help with those things, and help give people the chance. You talked about the training part earlier. I think we need to be able to do that for others. So one of the things that happens in any situation, but I think we see it more in the fire service, maybe just because we're aware of it and we're there, is when you see two people, you mentioned earlier, you run into somebody that's like you, and you see two people that are the same, and they gravitate. I mean, it could be something as simple as they're both Dolphins fans, which who wants to do that or be that? That's embarrassing. But
I'm a Dolphins fan.
I know. But you're drawn that way, right? Just like we talked about earlier with the firefighters who are drawn to each other. So the same thing can happen with like two black individuals who are at the same station one day. And I've actually seen pictures of a couple of guys I work with that's awesome. There's like, they're like, he said, he goes, the three brothers on the truck. And I started laughing. I go, what? I said, we're all brothers. And he kind of chuckled. But he's like, look at this, never happens. And I'm like, and I know there are people who are offended by that.
Right.
I remember one time we had a station where we ended up with three females on an engine and two females on a rescue at the same station.
Yeah.
And there are people who were offended by the fact they were celebrating it. Mm-hmm. Kind of talk a little bit about why that's not something that people should take offense to.
Yeah, no, definitely not. You can't take offense to that, because you know what that does is you're celebrating progression.
Yeah.
And you can't not fault celebrating progression.
Yeah.
Just like you said, the quote unquote brothers on the truck. We do it at my department all the time. We take pictures, we take pictures on an everyday basis, yeah. But when you have your friends that you're close to, just like I gave that example, the guys that you go mini season, you know, lobstering, you take a picture on the boat. We're just doing it at the station because we don't really get that opportunity to be working with our, the people who are close to us.
Yeah.
It's all about being close to people.
Mm-hmm.
I seen a picture, float around a couple of months ago that we had three, females on a suppression truck, which is like the first time ever.
Yeah.
In an department with over like 125 years, which is, that's just celebrating progression.
Yeah.
There is nothing wrong with that. I do it, I know many people do it, and actually everybody does it, and they just don't know that they're doing it. You're just taking pictures with their friends.
You're exactly right. Well, I like the way you said it, celebrating progression. I know that a friend of mine became the first female fire chief in a department up in, I think it was Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw the article, and it was really cool, great article. I mean, she's really worked her way up there. And then one of the people went, it was some of the comments, why are we just celebrating the fact she's a woman? Who cares? Mm-hmm. She's doing her job. But no, you're missing the point. It's the first. I remember when Obama was elected president, mm-hmm. and the celebration in Chicago at the park there, mm-hmm. like that was a momentous occasion because I talked to many of my Black friends who said, we made it. I'm like, mm-hmm. well, what do you mean we made it? Well, it means it's possible. It's broken that barrier.
Right.
I kind of liken it to the whole drawing yourself to it, not even just the celebration, but even being drawn to people. Sometimes we do it unconsciously, like you said. My wife and I've been to Germany before,
mm-hmm.
and I know a few words in German and I can kind of get myself around, but that's about
mm-hmm.
it.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you, all of a sudden you hear English from a group off in the distance. You're like, oh, they're like us.
Right, right.
and it's funny because you want to go over and talk to them, like, mm-hmm. hey, where are you from?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's familiarity. There's nothing wrong with that. Now, if we do that to the extent of, hey, we finally made it here and screw all of you, well, that's not what we're talking about. But allowing us to celebrate friendship, celebrate progression. I love the way you said that, because I think it's important for us to understand that, because we tend to push against that.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have to agree with everything people stand for, believe in, and you're not going to agree on everything anyway, but allow that celebration to happen, because that is really where we're trying to get
mm-hmm.
to.
A couple weeks ago, we had a lieutenant, an African-American lieutenant, retire, and we all got together, and we went to breakfast, we went to Pete's, our little spot. Probably 10, 11 African-American firefighters that came to eat. And, obviously we took a picture, and then all the texts, start flying. How come I didn't get an invite? And, oh, is that how it's done? But you can't, progression shouldn't be taken as a threat.
Yeah.
It should be actually celebrated.
Yeah.
That opportunity is able to happen.
Yeah. I remember a friend of mine one time explained, because I asked the question, I said, well, Black History Month. It was a discussion we were having. This is years ago, and I said, I just don't understand. I mean, it's why does it need its own month? Like, Black History is part of history.
Mm-hmm.
And he looked at me and he goes, "Is it really?"
Right.
And I go, "Yeah, I studied about George Washington Carver and maybe two others right. that I could remember at the time. Mm-hmm. Martin Luther King." And he goes, "Yeah, but there's so much more."
Exactly.
And I remember mm-hmm. my dad actually explaining to me about the baseball, the Negro Leagues
mm-hmm.
in baseball, and mm-hmm. I remember when he explained to me how these individuals are some of the greatest athletes and baseball players of their time, but weren't allowed, because, yeah, we all know about Jackie Robinson, but mm-hmm. so it's even little things like that that remind you, hey, it's not celebrating that at the exclusion of right. anything else. It's let's celebrate this or study it or learn about it so we can add it in.
Mm-hmm.
So it becomes actually part of what's really happening here. And I think that's kind of the idea that I've started to learn
mm-hmm.
from some of these conversations, is just starting to appreciate mm-hmm. different things other than mine.
Right.
I think those preconceived notions keep us from that. Some of that stuff's unconscious, some of it's conscious. Listen, all of us have to be aware of the biases we have coming down from family members.
Yeah.
Where we grew up, how we were trained. And even little things like little comments that family members have made to you or a coach has made to you or whatever else may have seemed fine 20 years ago. And now you're going, oh, I look back at that and realize what that really was.
Right.
And the other thing I tell people is sometimes you just don't know any better. And I think what we're trying to do is try to get people to know better, right. Trying to get people to be aware. I know when I was in high school, there was a young man there who had come from a state down in the Deep South, we call the Deep South. Mm-hmm. And I remember really good guy, Christian guy. I mean, I knew who he was. And I remember one day when he told me a joke.
Mm-hmm.
And it had the N-word in it. And I went, what did he just say? And,
right.
And he just said it like it was nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like a funny joke. And I was very uncomfortable because mm-hmm. I didn't say anything. I just right. walked away from him. I should have said that. You shouldn't have said that. But right. I was so taken aback. I just walked away going, mm-hmm. what just happened? I look back at that now and I can process all of it through my experience now mm-hmm. and realize that kid grew up in an area where that was just probably commonplace.
Right.
Probably not even, probably mm-hmm. everybody did it. And it was just, when mm-hmm. you grow up thinking that's what it is, that's what he did. And I bet you, I know him, I'm not in touch with him anymore, but I know he's a really good guy. And mm-hmm. I bet that would probably embarrass
yeah.
the crud out of him
today, right.
to know that he actually used to do that. Because I guarantee he doesn't now.
That's what the awareness is about.
Yeah.
Though, that now that we have the awareness that we have and the conversations that we've had as a nation.
Yeah.
It just how we told your joke and you walked away and didn't say something right
yeah.
then. I have full confidence that if someone said that to you oh. now, it wouldn't be able to go past the next sentence.
Well, and the other thing is, if you not only would I do that, but I think also we start to have conversations that let people know that would never be okay to tell me.
Right.
That's the other thing too, is I think we have started to grow and progress mm-hmm. as a society.
Mm-hmm.
One.
Mm-hmm.
But also individually to be able to go, okay, that's not okay. And I think we have to give some grace to people on their past and go, okay. And then we go, okay, we gave you grace. There's forgiveness. Now, how do we get you to the, how do I get myself? How do we get all of us? There are some things we could all look in our own departments and go, man, that was bad.
Mm-hmm.
That shouldn't have happened 20 years ago, 25 years ago, whatever it was. Okay, now how do we make sure that doesn't happen now?
Mm-hmm.
How do we make sure that people aren't hired based on bias, that they aren't promoted based on bias, make sure that they are given the opportunity. And so I would say to the officers who are out there watching, be intentional.
Mm-hmm. And deliberate.
Yes. Make mm-hmm. sure that you are going, okay, who is the best person for this job and how do I continue to change mm-hmm. this culture in my department? How do I make sure that we aren't progressing these stereotypes, that we aren't mm-hmm. promoting them?
I think that's less subjectivity and more objectivity.
For sure.
You know.
So explain a little bit about the subjectivity versus objectivity and how we can ensure that happens in our fire department.
So the subjectivity is all based on opinions and bias for the most part. You know, let's for example do a promotional exam. You go into your practical and you have someone that is objectively marking off what you did say, what you didn't say, what you did perform, what you didn't perform, and you come up with, you cultivate a score, and that's your score. I could see subjectivity wise when if you go into an interview and you're just telling about yourself and you're presenting yourself in a way that they're marking you, but their own personal bias could get in the way of you, of what you're doing. You know what I mean? Like we talked about before, where they grew up or how they grew up might decide how they're going to rate you.
Yeah.
Objectively.
Yeah.
And I think there has to be a fine line between taking more an objective approach to things than and leaving the subjectivity for the past.
That's good. Yeah, and I think that we have to make sure as fire departments that's what's happening. I know in my department a lot of it has become very automated
mm-hmm.
and checkmark based for that very purpose. And listen, there are parts that I hate.
Yeah.
I hate the fact that you can't have any subjectivity because there's some really, really good people
mm-hmm.
that miss out on opportunities because they're just not good at that part of it.
Right.
But there's some things they're going to have to give
mm-hmm.
so that we can get better at this and so that we don't have any bias, unintentional or intentional,
right.
Aware or not, that we can make sure there's not any of that in there. Right. So if you're an officer out there setting those standards, mm-hmm. make sure it's not prejudice. Make sure it's not right. a biased system. Make sure it can be as fair as possible. Mm-hmm. And I think we have other people that can go the other way. We have departments that go into the liability side of things, and all they worry about is, are we going to get sued?
Right.
You can't do that either, mm-hmm. and just make every decision based on, well, we might get sued. Well, you're probably going to get sued all the time if you're a fire department, mm-hmm. hiring people. How do we do it the fairest way possible and make sure people have an opportunity? Those preconceived notions, if we're aware of them, cease to become preconceived notions. That's the other thing. I think that if we start to become aware of it, mm-hmm. and I know that what these conversations that for me in the last few months have made me start looking at strangers differently. Mm-hmm. I find myself when really for me, it was more the young people, like the teenagers who just annoy me when they're riding their bikes through the parking lot. I feel like the old codger who just doesn't like, those kids get off my lawn. I feel like that guy sometimes. I don't feel like I'm that old, but I remember myself kind of going, wait, I'm making a prejudgment on these, and these kids are going through a pandemic and they're at home. Mm-hmm. They're probably ready to just pull off steam. Like, let's give a little grace and a little mercy. And I think we do that with a lot of people, is we start to see things differently. And if we could, if you start to believe the best about people, I say this all the time. If a Kansas City Chiefs player gets in trouble with the law, my first response is, did he really do it? Like, you know, if Oakland Raiders, Las Vegas Raiders, our arch enemy, or the Patriots player did something, criminal.
Yeah,
guy's a criminal, horrible guy. Probably should be booked for the rest. That's our assumption. We do the same thing with the sports teams that we follow, the political parties. We give them the benefit of the doubt. We also do this a lot of times with our family. If my kid does something and it might not be the right thing, my first response is, well, what was her motivation? I bet she was trying to do, well, why don't we do that with other people? Why don't we go, I bet their motivation was good. I bet. And listen, this happens when it comes to fire department investigations. If you're in charge of that type of thing, let's try to believe the best in people, and then let's get to the facts. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But we don't do that. We go, oh, it's time to hammer somebody.
Right.
People who are in charge of, if you're watching this from internal affairs, you know, be aware of that type of stuff that we do, and make sure that we fix some of that. The other thing I want you to understand is there is a responsibility with this. If you see, we haven't really hit on sexual harassment that much here, but because we're really trying to focus kind of on the diversity side of things, but it kind of all falls together. If you see someone being treated wrongly based on their age, race, gender, I mean, there's a whole list, religious preference, sexual orientation, all of these things. If you see somebody being treated inappropriately that way, or somebody being harassed sexually, being treated inappropriately because of whatever, you really have a responsibility to do something about it. Now, your department policy may say, and I think we talked about this, like some departments say you should.
Yeah, my department is... If you see something as a firefighter, you're expected to, or, you know, like you're expected to.
Yes.
If you're an officer, you have to.
Right. You shall.
You shall.
It's a word that's always used.
You shall.
Should and shall and will, may and might, all that stuff.
Because as an officer and as a leader, you're responsible for the people under you.
And it's important to understand that, you know, at your home, in your own circle and your social circle, if you do something wrong and you treat somebody inappropriately, you face the consequences from that social group, right? Unless you do something illegal. I mean, if you just say something off the cuff that's racially motivated or sexually motivated, you're probably not going to get in any huge trouble, except maybe not ever be invited back to that group again. You're going to face the social consequences. We want you to understand that there's a different thing in the fire service. You do that in the fire service, You can be suspended, warned, fired, and even end up in jail. Mm-hmm. This is a whole different thing we're talking about, because once you work for a government entity, you now fall under their standards. And if you now discriminate against someone, harass someone, show some type of racial inequality to someone, you can be in really big trouble. Well, that's how I was raised. No.
Right.
That might be. Mm-hmm. And that's going to get you a pass with me as your friend to help you with something, but it's not going to give you a pass with the attorney who goes after you. So this is important. This is stuff that's not just, hey, you might want to try to do this a little better. It's imperative we do it right. Yes, we'd love to see our morale get better and love to see our departments do better. Mm-hmm. And those are some outgrowths that come from it. But we also don't want to see you become interrogated, interviewed, and questioned in line with something illegal.
Right.
The other thing we want you to do is this. You have a responsibility to say something when something happens too. This is a tough thing in the fire service, especially if it's happening to you. We've had experiences in my department, I've had experiences in your department where people have had to make a decision. Do I summon up the courage to go say what happened to me, to go have this conversation? And that 100%. Is really, really difficult. We live in this culture where this tradition, this we talk about it, hundreds of years of tradition, unimpeded by progress. It's kind of the fire department joke. But we get in this culture where we go, hey, how do I step up and say something against this officer or this 20-year veteran or the senior Jake who really is being very inappropriate?
I've had it before. I've had it myself where I had to pretty much make that decision. Do I say something to make a big deal about it? Or because I was on a promotional list and I said, you know what? On this one, sometimes you got to, you know, put your head down and you know, push through just to make sure you don't cause any waves. But by saying that, the younger you are in your profession, the more, let's say, more naive you are to those things. But in the more years you have on the service, you know exactly, you're confident enough to say, you know what, that's not right. I'm going to say something.
And that brings up a great point. I think that what happens is we, as people who've been on the job, need to protect some other people.
Exactly.
Because you might have a younger male or female, minority, whoever it is, that may not feel comfortable and say something. So we need to kind of put a little wing over the top and go, hey, I got you.
Right.
And hey, you're not going to, that's not okay.
Right.
For us to be able to step up and listen, if a comment gets made, I don't immediately need to go call IA. But I can go, hey, that's not okay. I need to have a conversation man to man. If you said something that was racially charged, motivated, sexually charged, motivated, whatever, my job is to come to you and go, hey,
that's not okay.
That's not okay. That needs to be the very first thing. And even, I mean, they talk about that in sexual harassment 101. You have to first say no. You have to first tell them that's not okay. So we try to remind people, hey, that's the first thing. Have a conversation. That's not okay. If it continues, you need to do something about it. And I'm going to start with those of us who have a little bit of time and have the confidence to do that. Step up for those young people. Mm-hmm. Step up for the new people and go, you can't do that to them. That's not okay. Even if it's just a, hey, you're going to do every chore here for the next 2 months and we're not going to do anything. I don't think even that's right. I try to step up and go, hey, I got you. I'll be out there with you. There's little things like that. But then when it gets into things that could be illegal, discriminatory, harassing, abusive, whatever, harassing, we need to make sure we do something about that. The second thing is this. If you are the person that's happening to, you really need to make sure you step up. Have the conversation, ask some advice, and then when the time is right, if it needs to happen, then you have to file a complaint. There's ways to do it with your department internally. There's ways to do it with in Florida here, the Florida Commission on Human Relations, and then U.S. Equal Employment, EEOC. Your municipality may have a diversity section. I know we have one that focuses on these things as well. There are ways to get things done. It doesn't mean that somebody who says something to you, let's go get them fired. But let's have a conversation with that person to make sure it never happens again. Because here's the deal. If it's happening to you, it means it's happening to somebody else. Do something about it. Do it the right way. Because I'm going to tell you right now, if all you do is the moment you get your feelings hurt, now let's be clear on this, the moment you get your feelings hurt and something got said to somebody else and you heard it and you went, oh, and you immediately go to internal affairs, you are not going to be doing well in your department.
Right.
Because there is a man-to-man, woman-to-woman. There's something to be said for face-to-face. I need to be an adult and have a conversation with you about this. But once that's done and it's not changing, then you need to go to the next step. And we need to make sure that we change this culture. And people, oh, this is a tattletale. That's why we put. That's why the government put in things called you can't retaliate.
Right.
You know, against the whistleblower. That's why these rules came into place, because people need to be protected to do the right thing. We're not advocating for.
No.
Go complain about every little thing that happens in the fire service. We're not saying that. Be tough, be strong, but have some real conversations, because you'd be surprised a real conversation that says, hey, let me talk to you about this. I'll never forget a conversation with Vince when we were discussing, and this was years ago, and there was a black police chief who was on TV doing something phenomenal, by the way. Killed it, did a great job. And I had already said to Vince, hey, let me know if I ever do something that steps out of line. I need to know. And I remember talking to him about this situation. I'm like, this was really good. And I said, this dude was so well-spoken. And he goes, and we get done with the conversation. And he goes, can I talk to you about something? I'm like, yeah. And he goes, you said you wanted me to let you know if you ever did anything. I'm like, what'd I do? He goes, well, you said he was well-spoken. I go, yeah. And he goes, I know you. And I know that you're a guy who likes to speak and teach. And so you kind of critique people. From the people who are in the black community, if someone says that one of their people is well-spoken, the assumption is most Black people aren't. And right. I went, well, I've never think that. He goes, but you wanted to know.
Mm-hmm.
And I went, oh, I've never once since then said that about anybody, because I realized. And his comment was, he said, it's kind of like saying the white cornerback is fast. Oh, that guy's fast.
Mm-hmm.
Or he said, or the Black quarterback is smart. He goes, it's just, he kind of went through a whole little, and I went, wow, those are little things we can all learn from each other.
Right.
We need to make sure we're not slipping into some of those things. Let people know what they're doing. Let people know that there's a difference, there's a change. Mm-hmm. And then call people out when they say something wrong. I heard somebody the other day say, I don't see color. And I went, well, I've been trained by my friends. That is not what you say. And I go, listen, I know what you're trying to say, but do you understand that everybody sees color? Yeah. We all do. So yeah. Let's just admit we do it. Yeah. And then I'm not going to judge
right.
based on color. It just sounds...
It discredits yourself.
Yeah, just exactly. And I need to say it like that. Mm-hmm. I told him it sounded dumb. You discredit yourself sounds a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little more tactful. But yeah, I think there's ways for us to do this the right way. And if you would just intentionally go, how do I change myself? Make sure I'm not biased. Make sure I'm not showing any previous biases or preconceived notions. We start to change the department as a culture individually, one by one.
Mm-hmm.
So, Brandon, as we kind of wrap this up, it's important to talk about kind of our culture today, where we're at. Mm-hmm. You mentioned social media and some of the things that have driven a lot of this. And the events of the last couple of years, I would say, have gotten a little more coverage, a little more publicity. And as a result, there's been a lot of backlash. Some good, some bad. And what I find is that, once again, we talk about people's filter.
Mm-hmm.
Some people go, oh yeah, finally, here we go. And other people are like, whoa, 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 whoa. That may be too far. And then the moment somebody steps out of bounds and does too much, like, oh,
mm-hmm.
see?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I remember when it was, is it DeSean Jackson? Who's
he made the comment.
Yeah, he makes the anti-Semitic comments.
Mm-hmm.
Well, here's a guy who's been saying all the right things, and then I think Stephen Jackson was making the comments,
yeah.
And then they make the wrong comments, and it's like, well, everybody wants to go, well, then forget everything else they said. Well, right. Hold on. Those are wrong. Let's address those. It doesn't make everything else, you know, so that it's kind of where we're at. And so kind of from your perspective, how do we learn from this? How do we approach those types of situations? How do we handle this, and how do we get better?
Yeah, we have to learn that when people make comments, you know, it's a moment in time that is frozen, especially on social media. I mean, what people think when they're 14 years old is going to be different than what they think at 20, and what they think at 30 should be different than at 40. So, you know, you have to take it. You gotta put emphasis on where they are in their life. And I know media and social media blows it up, but you have to really focus on where they are in their life and how the comment was made. I think if we were so focused on the actual comment and not the overall, you know, picture, I think that's something that we need to do.
Yeah, and I think that we have, you know, people who are protesting
mm-hmm.
are making a stand. People who are rioting are committing crimes.
Right.
So it's you know, there's a difference. And so we have to kind of judge all of it. Mm-hmm. Just like there are people, just like we talked about before, there are cops who have been really, really amazing and done all the right things. And someone has died, probably not rightfully so, but as a result of all the correct things being done.
Mm-hmm.
There's other things that are just straight up criminal.
Right.
So each one has to be taken in the context of what it is. And the cancel culture comes out and we're going to cancel everything out. And there's all kinds of opinions mm-hmm. about that. All of these things should lead us to conversations. And that, I think that's the point we want everybody to understand mm-hmm. is we have to keep having conversations. We didn't have that one text and then just stop talking about it.
Right.
We're going to keep talking about it, mm-hmm. you know, and we're going to, that text thread is still going, and I'm sure something's going to come up. We're all, hey, what do you guys think about that? And we don't have to all agree with the people we love and care about. You and I have never even talked about politics, so I have no idea if we're even on the same page or not. It doesn't matter, because we can have discussions and disagree and agree about some things and go, okay, it's time to move on. What we want you all to do is understand that as firefighters, we have a responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
We are the last line of defense. I mean, they always say that, but really, I mean, I remember being very new on the job, and all of a sudden, next thing you know, I'm helping pick up ducklings out of a drain. Have you ever storm drain?
Yep.
Have you ever done it?
Yep.
I think every firefighter said it at least mm-hmm. once. I remember, how did we get here? Like, how did I get this right. job? I don't know what I'm doing. But it's because when that's what the joke about the cat in the tree. Mm-hmm. It's because the fire department is the one who will, hey, how do we get the aerial ladder up there and get the tree? It's just kind of what happens. We're the ones who have to go do it. So cops are that first line of defense to make sure everything's safe. And then, as my buddy says, we're the second responders. That's his running joke, I'm sure. But as we go in there, then we have to just do it all. So we have to keep doing that. If we're going to do that at a high level, the only way to make sure we do that is to continue to learn and continue to grow. To make sure we create an environment in our culture, in our station, mm-hmm. that allows people to feel comfortable, to feel welcome, to not feel harassed, and to start to pick people up. I think we as firefighters are some of the greatest public servants ever, not just because we're doing that job, but because of the job we do. Mm-hmm. And we have an opportunity to make people better. We have an opportunity to help them. Why wouldn't we do that for the people we work with? Why wouldn't we find that individual and go, oh, that's the loser, new guy or girl. Well, why don't we go over and help that person? Go, hey, let me move you along. Mm-hmm. And then when somebody's being treated wrongly because of their race, their gender, their background, let's step in and be the ones to do it. We want you all to start setting that tone. And there's a way for us to do that. There's a way for us to care enough about people to get rid of the bias, to get rid of the prejudice, to get rid of the stereotype and say, how do I treat people with respect? We don't expect you to do it perfectly. I don't, you don't, we all mess up on it. And we all find occasionally that bias slip into our brain. Don't just go, oh, I failed, I messed up. Go, how do I get that out of my brain? How do I move that aside and do the right thing? We all can do that. We hope that this has been an encouragement to you. I think this is the beginning of a conversation to continue doing more of these classes, because I think we can delve deeper into some of these topics to help people get better. We talk about mental health all the time. This is a part of that mental health, because if we're making sure that people feel respected and loved mm-hmm. and encouraged and valued at work, they don't have a lot of the issues that other people are having right now. So we want to make sure that we continue this conversation. Thank you to Brandon for joining me today and sharing from your perspective. I mean, we have to get more perspective. We have to have more conversation and more views of these things so we can help each other get better. Right. That's how this works. That's how we get better at it. And we look forward to seeing this conversation get started and continue to grow. Thank you.
Thank you.